I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support through PayPal at funetworktv@gmail.com and patreon.com/funetworktv. And now, here's your show.
The boys are really working very hard. Say, maybe you'd like to meet some of them.
For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, let's all say on the bus.
Hello and welcome to Mansplaining. I'm Stephen Kersner, and today we have an interesting topic, so interesting that I'm going to have our producer, Hafiz Noorani, who suggested it, explain it to us. Hafiz?
Well, it's the Fight Club episode.
We got to stop now. We can't talk about Fight Club.
Uh-oh. Well, we're breaking the rules of Fight Club.
Okay.
And yeah, we're going to talk about fighting. You know what? In terms of the concept of fighting, it's always been something that's hyper-masculine. And it's also something that, you know, is also a lot, it comes across in our sporting world as well. If you look at things like the UFC, boxing, wrestling, these are very much male-dominated areas. So I thought we'd explore the topic. You know, maybe we'll start out with asking, hey, have you ever been in a fight?
So are we talking about male problem-solving techniques that lean towards sort of aggression, or what are we talking about?
Well, I think there's a couple things here. There's definitely a segment of the male population that enjoys watching other two guys fight, or more. And then there's another segment of the population that has an emotional issue that cannot deal with emotions, I think, and falls to fighting in resolving that.
Okay, so it's kind of two parts, and I'll take the second part first, because I think it's interesting to talk about the fact that how men problem solve when there's a conflict between each other, and that nowadays more than it used to be, there is sort of a, hey, let's talk about it, but there's always, there's almost like a gunfight at the OK Corral posture that people take on.
With guys, there's always just this concept of, you know, if it gets too serious, we'll take it outside, right? It's still this concept in our heads.
Yeah, and I always say, you want to take it outside? Okay, you go outside. I'll stay in here. All right. Our panelists today, entrepreneur, inventor, and conservative political voice, Aaron Seale is with us. Hello, Aaron.
Hello, sir. Pleasure to be here, as always.
Glad to have you. MC Illtones himself, Chris Hamilton, is here.
Hey, what's going on, Stephen?
Good. And, what's going on? I say good. That's not really an answer. What's going on? We're doing a show. And returning this week, after a bit of an absence, the wind beneath our wings, Andy Willis. Sorry. Andy apparently has COVID.
Honey, I'm on the darts. I'm on Players Light right now.
Players Light?
I'm on the Maritime Keck. No.
Players Light? I thought you had to be 70 years old to smoke Players Light.
Well, after all I've seen, I'm not surprised if I am 70.
Are those the ones with the Navy cut on them?
Oh, you bet. With the sailor on it?
Yeah.
You know it.
Yeah, I thought you had to be really, really old to smoke those.
Well, what can I say? The cost of cigarettes these days, you got to go cheap.
Naval cut. What is the naval cut?
Navy cut. Yeah, it's I don't really know what it means.
I smoke cigarettes. What is the Navy before? But what is the Navy cut?
Who knows? But today's podcast is sponsored by Philip Morris.
Yay!
and
smoking, it's the right choice for you.
If you want some really great endorsement for it, just think about how Andy was coughing when we started.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. His lungs came up. Okay.
It makes your voice sound more manly.
I almost didn't recognize you.
No, thank you.
Yeah, your voice, it's
I prayed the gay away and it's gone. I'm a new man.
Okay. So let's talk about conflicts. I mean, okay, if you go back to childhood, I got into tons of fights. And that was because I was the smart, mouthy, short Jewish kid in a place where those things were not particularly treasured. I also refused to back down. Despite being shorter than they were, I didn't feel any fear of people who were bigger than me, because everyone was bigger than me. And so I mean, my optometrist made a good living off me because my glasses kept getting broken. But I know that I would get my Irish up if I'm not Irish, but I just wouldn't back down. You know, I could have avoided the violence if I just acquiesced and tried to find another way, or just, you know, stepped aside and just let them, you know, be bullies and stuff. But it was like, no, my blood got up. I was like, no, fuck you. That's not going to happen. And never lost a fight, even though there was sometimes 3-on-1 and they were bigger than me. I never lost a fight because, you know why? They were taller and bigger than me, so I was more motivated. But yeah, that was the way you solved fights when you were a kid, is it wasn't something you talked out. You fought, and people would gather around watching the fight, enjoying the fight, not caring who won, just enjoying watching the fight. And then I think as I got older, I mean, I certainly know that in my 20s and 30s, I would get into, you know, arguments with people, I guess, conflicts with a lot of people. Things that now, if the same thing happens and there's a disagreement, I find a different way around it. I don't wind up butting heads, because I eventually found out that it just led to more butting heads. And but there's times you need to stand your ground. And I did. But now, as I'm older, I don't even have the patience. I don't feel the need. I don't feel that same rush and that need to argue with people and fight with people. I'd rather just say, yeah, okay, whatever. And find, not give up, but find another way than having to butt heads with somebody like two rams on a hill. What about you, Hafiz?
You know what? A similar story with you. When I was younger,
you were a young Jewish kid.
Well, similar. I was. I have parents with they're Christian. My mom's Christian, and my dad's Muslim, and that was not always accepted in the Middle East. And so I was a little bit of an outcast sometimes. And
is it accepted now in the Middle East?
Well, I mean, you got to understand the thing in terms of an elementary school. It's accepted, but it's not like, you know, in a cultural sense, when it's elementary school and majority of the population is Muslim, and the concept of, you know, mixed marriages is a little cold taught to them. Then there can be a bit of a thing, but you know what? A couple punches in the right way, and people's opinions change. especially if I'm never one to pick a fight. I think moving to North America, fighting was not so much of a thing for me anymore. But I have an ability to make friends with people really easily, and even. With a little bit of charisma, maybe changing someone's mind that's kind of pissed off at me. But it happens sometimes. You know what? Some people want to push the barrier, and sometimes you have to defend yourself. And I learned that the hard way over here. I got hit in the nose once when I was a kid, and the dude ran away. And I was bleeding all over the place. It was kind of an eye-opener for me. Well, a nose-opener. I think in terms of how I was socialized over here, I grew up in the late 90s, so there was a lot of influence of a lot of aggravating, aggressive music from stuff like hip-hop and whatnot. I remember there was a lot of big fights. In my high school in particular, there was a bit of a divide between the immigrant kids and the non-and the white kids. And so particularly there was a Persian population and the white population. I didn't fit into either. And but there was this big battle going on in over there. And it was all a lot of fueled by male aggression and this desire to be violent. And you know, I went to a high school where there was a kid stabbed in the neck with a screwdriver, right?
Jesus.
So yeah. So, and this is North Vancouver of all places. So I think, and you know, there'd always be you know, fights after school. You'd know where to go to see the fights. We were blessed with all these woods all around our school, so people would just go out for a little walk. But I think that culture has changed, and I can really appreciate that of you know this aggressiveness in schools for men in particular.
I think also the fact that schools have developed this zero tolerance policy, so even if you're defending yourself in a fight, you're out.
And that's a little bit bullshit, because I also look at a lot of the things that kids pose, and these zero tolerance policies usually turn around when the kids actually have already said, you know what, enough's enough. You teachers aren't doing shit. I'm gonna punch this fucker back, and then they get caught, and they get the hit on the zero tolerance policy. I don't think it's an issue. The zero tolerance policy always works the best because it doesn't deal with the actual issue of why this kid's being picked on.
Well, because they don't care. They just want it to stop.
Exactly.
They just want the violence to stop, the picking on to continue. What about you, Chris? We've discussed, I guess, so far sort of journeys that we've taken, being of kids feeling the need to use, like male kids, feeling, let's not even get into the kind of aggression and fights that women get into, which I think are actually worse. Young boys feel the need to solve things with a physical aggression and hostility. And as you get older, you start to think, what the fuck am I doing? What about you, Chris?
Yeah, so I've definitely been in some fights. I grew up in a small rural town of the Comox Valley, and it's comprised of three towns, Cumberland, Comox, and Courtney. And there was like a rival high school situation. So the people from one high school didn't get along with the people from another high school. And I think that it's kind of instinctive at some level. I mean, yeah, like you mentioned earlier, Stephen, rams butting heads on the top of the mountain there. It's like a male peacocking thing. There were a lot of fights where I grew up. I was in some, I won some, I lost some. I think as we get older, we kind of just realize that this has nothing to do with self-preservation. So the instinct component of it actually switches in the other direction. So as we're growing up, we haven't yet been fully domesticated. So it is part of our instinctive nature to, you know, fight, to exert our authority over another person so that we'll have more friends. Those things are totally instinctual, to be the leader of the pack. But as we age, we kind of just learn, hey, it's not to my benefit to, you know, have a black eye and a swollen lip and to be limping around for the next week. It's more to my benefit to avoid these things using intellect, right? So nowadays, like, the thought of fighting or whatever, it just, I don't know, kind of appalls me and just, you know, puts me off. I'm not really into, you know, walking around with a black eye and feeling sore and, you know, that's not really in my nature anymore, because I've learned there are other ways to deal with this. But yeah, when I was growing up, there were lots of them in my town. The Comox Valley actually does have a reputation for being, you know, lots of rednecks, lots of people who, you know, don't have a whole lot else to do other than drink beer and, you know, fuck shit up is kind of the motif of the valley. So yeah, used to see it all the time. I remember this one time I fully wussed out. So usually I wouldn't back down, but there was one time that I fully wussed out. I was at this house party and this dude had just been starting shit with me all night. He was just, you know, lipping me off. And I eventually left the house party, but ran into him later that night when I was with a few friends and he was with one other friend. And the guy walked up and he slapped me, and I didn't want to fight this guy at all. And I had the reputation of being kind of a scrappy dude. And I totally wussed out of this fight, and it always stuck with me just because I looked like a total, total wuss when previously the people who I was surrounded with that night thought that I was like, I would just like immediately just tune this guy up, and I didn't. And yeah, I remember it hurt the pride quite a bit. So yeah, I mean, it is part of our nature, I mean, to, you know, defend ourselves. And in that situation, I would have seen nothing wrong with it. You know, if somebody attacks me, I'm not, I shouldn't just, you know, turn turtle and lay on the ground and cry about it. But yeah, like as time goes on, you know, it's more to my benefit to not get into fights. And I think that that's human nature as well, as to preserve ourselves at whatever the cost.
Well, I think as we get older, we realize we're less capable of recovering. Aaron Seal, how about you? What are your experiences like compared to the rest of us?
Well, it's interesting to trace out the personal stories. My trajectory, my gift for whoever up there gave it to me, has always been words rather than physical strength. So I was on the debate team when I was in high school, and I learned early on how to use words for that purpose, for conflict resolution. It's interesting, though, as I on the entertainment side, because we started out talking about the difference between fighting for conflict and fighting for entertainment. I eventually went on to take martial arts as a phys ed elective, and I learned that based on the way my body was constructed, that I had more leg strength than I gave myself credit for, and I turned out to be reasonably good by comparison my class at grappling, and that turned out to be fun because I could propel myself against my opponent in a way that I couldn't if I was in a traditional fight. So that was fun to learn over the years, but for the most part, it's always been a story of words, whether it's been debating in politics. One of the instincts that I had to develop as somebody who didn't have a history of these sort of normal male conflicts was stiffening the spine over the years and not resorting to just avoidance or acceptance, to be willing to sharpen the verbal knives when necessary. Now, if anybody listening has seen my posts on Twitter, you've surely seen that I've earned a few punches in the face if anybody finds me in an at some point, and I'm sort of keeping myself stoic, expecting that will come at some point, but I've never thrown a punch and I don't expect to.
That's interesting. I mean, I've always used my words as well, but those were the things that often got me into trouble. And
well, there is a link there for sure.
You know, as people got taller and taller, and I didn't, I discovered that I could abuse, like, you know, get them with words. And people would look at them like, it's not sporting. You're, you know, 2 feet taller than this guy. Okay, 2 feet would be a bit of an exaggeration, but you're bigger than this guy and you're letting him get to you with words. It made the other person who wanted to resort to violence look like a fool, and they felt stupid too. And so it sort of ended the fights.
But that's the Goodwill Hunting story, if you remember the scene at the bar.
Yeah, they stole that from me. Andy Willis. Let's hear your stories, sir.
You know, I don't have many schoolyard fights, to tell you the truth. I can't really think of many when I was a kid. But one thing I wonder if Andrew Scheer has ever had the living shit kicked out of him, because he has the most punchable face and the most punchable policies I've ever... Do you think he's ever gone to a lot of fights?
I'll wager no.
Yeah, I would say he would probably... the way he acts politically, he's a political coward. So that probably carries forward into other things, but I'm interested in that. You are a bright light, and usually people like to douse that. You are outspoken. You know, you're very much a very defined, strong personality, and that threatens people. And yet you're saying you really didn't have any issues, any fights, nobody bullying you, nothing like that.
Yeah, no, I didn't really, like, I didn't have many conflicts as a kid, except for with my own home. And I remember the first time I was ever physically abused by a family member, I slapped right back. And then I learned really quick that's not how it kind of works. So you kind of just have to take the beatings and then live through it and get out of it. But in university, that's the only place I ever encountered homophobia, extensive homophobia. I mean, of course, you have that in elementary school, but it's not as tacit or as damaging as when you're in university and you're an adult. And, you know, I had someone grab me, put me in a kind of a chokehold and swing me around, call me a faggot, send me a message saying they break my fingers off, shove them up my ass. You know, I went to the president of my university, and for the last 8 months, I've been writing to them and to HR and to everyone in between saying, you know, hey, there's some serious homophobia, some serious violence here. And, you know, of course, any administration, any institution is going to want to cover their own ass and not do anything. But I really raised hell. I went to the Minister of Advanced Education, Melanie Mark, and got a couple hundred people to write emails. And, you know, so I've always been the type of person that fights with my words. I don't fight back physically. And especially when I'm in a physical fight, I'm not going to want to escalate it. But no, I've never encountered too much physical violence from kids in the schoolyard. But in university, I encountered it, and in my home, I encountered it.
Okay, well, your experience is obviously very different than ours, unfortunately.
No, who cares? I mean, you live through it. I mean, like, that's the thing. You get shitty things happen to people, and it's really all about, like, how you deal with them. And, you know, if you can muster a few people around you to care. So, you know, I'm doing damn good, you know, and I'm always happy to be here.
Well, that's why we're glad to have you.
Thank you.
Now, guys, we talked about how when we were kids, we felt the need to respond, you know, we felt to be boys and men, we responded with a physical posture. Why do you think that is? Where do you think that idea of masculinity came to us at that young age and we felt it? Is it something that is instinctive, or is it something that is societal from the TV that we took in and the messaging of media? What do you think, Aaron?
Well, it's interesting to think about like the most fundamental concepts of men and women, because like they're defined, they're changing over time. And when I think of the gender divide, one of the first thing that comes to mind to me is, what's your instinctive response to conflict? Do you provoke? Are you conciliatory? And I think that the gender instinct that we've associated with the male body over time is the one that it longs to fight. And that's evolving, because there are some women, I think, who have the same instinct to knock back down instead of folding on their own interests. But if you look at things like fight posture, as you say, if you were going to fight, you don't always signal it in words. You signal it through subtle cues, whether it's through look or whether it's through the placement of the body. And I think over time, the way it developed, to answer your question, is before throwing a punch, you want to subtly communicate the threat. And you do that. There's a physical stance that developed over time to do that.
Okay. What about you, Chris? What do you think? Is that innate feeling of when we were young, fighting, that physical conflict, is that innate? Is that something that is inherent, or is that something that is socialized?
So it's a little bit of nature and nurture, I think, there, Stephen. So I touched on this a little bit earlier, that as we go on, we do become domesticated by our surroundings. But it is, rams in the wilderness. If we were in the caveman days, for example, it might be instinctive for me to want to create fire. So I don't have the skills necessary to create the fire. So I go to the neighboring cave, and the guy who has the fire in his cave, I rough him up a little bit to gain the skills to create the fire. Or, I teach him how to create a wheel or whatever and do it through diplomacy. But it is instinctive to need these things and to, fight physically for them if need be. But we also have things like, I just recently watched Sons of Anarchy front to back. And it's amazing to me, like, for all the entertainment value that is in the show, and I love it, to be brutally honest with you, Jack, the main character, and I guess the protagonist, I don't know if you can call him that, is just like a violent psychopath, right? And I think it's a sign of the times that people kind of idolize this sort of thing. So as I'm watching, I'm, intelligent enough to understand that this is not a role model for the community or anything like that. But I'm sure there's dudes out there who do watch it and think, wow, I really want to be this guy. You see the people wearing the vests and rocking the gear, the Sons of Anarchy gear with the emblem emblazed across the back. So I think it is a little bit of nature and nurture, because we are born with this, survival instinct that says, if we need to throw down to get what we need to be comfortable and to make it through life, we will do that, as is dictated by our inherent mammalian characteristic. But there's also those external factors like the media we consume, even just the news, especially down in the States. It's all violence all the time, and that's what people are consuming constantly. And you've touched on sports a little bit earlier, UFC, wrestling or boxing, that stuff is all based on raw human competition, which is fighting. So it's like ingrained in us on that level as well.
Yeah, we're going to get to the sports stuff shortly. But Hafiz, what do you think? When we're young and we get into physical fights as boys, is that because boys fight? Is there some brainstem thing? Or is it because we've seen an awful lot of messaging in media and elsewhere?
I think there's a couple things here. Like, I go back and I think of me and my younger cousin. He and I are like the same age. But we both liked, when we were little, we both had He-Man figures and action figures. And we saw the superheroes and we liked the action movies. But we also had a tendency of, if you left us alone long enough, the two of us would end up into a fight with each other and then be best friends again, mm-hmm. an hour later. But there's another thing I noticed, because I think it's not so much that boys are socialized to fight as much as girls are socialized not to fight. And it was unladylike or not right for a girl to express violence, and was told to keep quiet. But I think even that's even changed in our society. We see a lot more women taking up things like martial arts and even in the, if you look on YouTube, you see girls acting out like guys used to in high school, where they start fights, and you know, what girl fights is a whole subcategory on YouTube now.
Well, I mean, my wife is sort of educated in this stuff, and she's pointed out like just that the way women or girls are taught to deal with aggression is actually more insidious and probably more damaging than nursing like a bloody nose.
Yeah, you know what? Like the whole push to internalize it and not do anything was equally damaging, but also expressing it like in an aggressive fashion the way men do is not healthy either. Although I think in society, we all men need to have a little bit of a back and forth, and I mean not so much in the workplace, but when we're young, to kind of understand what that is, right, and why you don't do it. And it's okay when you're younger, but I think the excessiveness of violence that you see in our society stems from a lot of people that have an aggressive sort of society and background where violence is perpetuated.
Okay, well, you could say that was North America too. I mean, growing up, I grew up watching you know, Private Eyes and things like that on TV and John Wayne movies and stuff like that, and it was always stand your ground, and there was always violent charges in it, and that sort of messaging to me was that's what boys did. And you don't see that quite. You still, you know, that's bullshit. You still see plenty of it in TV and movies, but you now also see, like you said, women getting involved in that and so on. I just saw a terrible movie starring Charlize Theron where she was kicking as much ass as Chuck Norris ever did.
You didn't like that?
The Old Guard?
Yeah.
No, I thought it was the most ridiculous, stupid thing I'd ever seen. The fights were good. The story was absurd.
It was a little absurd, but I don't know. I thought it was all right.
I couldn't suspend my disbelief, but she was amazing. She did a lot of her own
stuff. She was really good at it, yes.
Yeah, she also wrecked her hand during it, but
that's
another story. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about violent entertainment, which seems to be the province of men. You know, MMA, wrestling, boxing, football, these are all very aggressive sports. Fighting and hockey, which they keep trying to clean up, but then everyone says, where's the fighting?
You never see it in the women's leagues. Not really, I don't think.
I don't know. I they don't get as much TV coverage, so I mean, I wouldn't know. I don't give a shit about sports. And the only boxing match I've ever seen has been in Rocky movies. But there is a very hyper-masculine culture to watching people engage in, men engage in violent activities. Why do you think that is, Andy?
I really can't say. Maybe it's perhaps that we wish we had a little bit of power ourselves, so we kind of go for it. I think there's also a major cofactor that it's really simple. I think when violence becomes real in your own life, that's how you learn it. So I think a lot of people can watch violence on television and certainly won't act upon it or, you know, in their fantasy world. But then when, you know, your dad's beating you, your mom's hitting you, you know, there's like verbal altercations. That's when it becomes real. That's when it becomes practice. That's when you get that feeling in your chest where you get angry. And then the natural response is to scream, yell, or to hit, or to be violent. I certainly can agree to this because in my household, that's how anger, frustration, confusion was dealt with, was by, you know, hitting me over the back of the head. You know, I used to get beat with cutting boards as a kid, like crazy shit like that. But, you know, so for me, I've always had to challenge that when I get frustrated and angry, not to have an outburst. So, you know, I knew really early on, thank God, that, you know, violence isn't a good option. But so I was able to kind of challenge that. But I think, yeah, I think when you see stuff, it doesn't really become real until it's actually real in your own life. One thing I do want to comment on is the coolest Canadian that I guess was violent. Does anyone remember the Shaunigan handshake?
Oh, the Shaunigan handshake.
Yeah, Shaunigan handshake. Yes.
Jean Chrétien.
Yeah. Dude, John Chrétien was a G. The pie in the face, the way he handled that, like everything. That, he, honest to God, was just like a real scrapper. And I mean, that to me is like, I feel like we're missing that in politics a little bit right now.
Well, yeah, there's, yeah, I can't see the leader of any of the three major parties grabbing somebody with in a Shawinigan handshake. No, I can't see that. But what are your thoughts on this, Aaron, on the thought that, like, why is there still this this hyper-masculine culture of men watching other men engage in violence?
Well, I'll tell you, Stephen, as a kid, I didn't understand this. Like, everybody who watched the wrestling or the boxing or even football, it just didn't make sense to me. When I got to university, my circle of friends changed, and I ended up watching football consistently just because that's what this group of people did. Mm-hmm. And I came to understand it on a strategy basis, sort of looking at a group of people working together, taking on distinct roles, trusting each other. Like, I see it now, both in the sense of fostering competitive spirit amongst teams, fostering goals. Those parts of it I understand. The part of it that I've never understood, and the part of it that's trouble if you think about it, is the type of person, and I'm sure we all know at least one, who enjoys watching fights because they enjoy seeing pain. And you can see it in other character traits in the way certain people deal with the world. But that type of person, I wonder personally if it's a chicken or an egg, if they flock to violent entertainment because they're trying to satisfy that instinct, or if it was conditioned over time as a result of the entertainment. So I worry about that, and I've met people like that. But for the most part, I look at this with a little wariness. It's not my thing, but I've come to understand it.
Okay. And what are your thoughts, Hafiz?
You know what? I think in terms of this idea of fighting as a sport, in our culture, it's part of it. I think we respect the aggressive male as a higher than the rest alpha male, and that concept is still ingrained within us. I think culturally. Across the board, actually, you will see men enjoy watching violence, and now even women. Stuff like the UFC has fans that are male and female, even wrestling. And I think it stems from our need to express that masculinity somewhere, where if you have that ability to fight, you kind of want to watch. Okay, so who's the best between these two? And I think, especially if you look at boxing, there's a level of respect between the fighters, and even with the most martial arts. But I think there's a need to figure out, you know, who's the best in this.
Well, I mean, okay, so it's almost, you're saying it's gladiatorial in a sense.
Yeah. Well, and at the end of the day, you know, as a society, we could like the soft stuff and whatnot. But it kind of is exhilarating watching that two people fight, and you get a little bit of that rush going yourself watching it. Your pace quickens, and you know, you get into the mood. Just like you were saying, when in elementary school, when there is a fight, there's a crowd. That crowd is a natural response.
Well, that crowd was always boys and girls.
Exactly, and I think culturally that's always really been the case.
I think that it's the attitude is, at least that I've perceived, is that men and boys should like watching this stuff. Women and girls can like watching it, but there's a cultural imperative that men, you signify your masculinity by watching
how much
these
you
guys
like it.
Fighting each other. Yeah, I mean, I've never known anybody who really loves UFC who is not a giant douchebag. Like, this is just fact in my life. My anecdotal evidence is that everybody I've known who is really into UFC and goes to watch it on pay-per-view at bars and things like that, or gets it at home, giant douchebags. And douchebaggery, as we talked about in previous shows, it's a lot of male posturing and men trying to I don't know, externalize their need to just demonstrate masculinity through doing things that are considered to be masculine activities, in which case it's watching guys beat the shit out of each other. I don't get it. Yes, there are people who like it. And when wrestling was really popular way back during its height, there were women who liked it because it's cartoons. And there really wasn't a sense anybody was really being
wrestling
hurt.
Is kayfabe, right? It's fabricated, but it uses some aspects of your physicality to create that show. UFC is not scripted, and it's just gratuitous violence. And it also has female fans. I think that might fall into with women, some women, in terms of attractive quality. But you know what? I have friends who like the UFC. I wouldn't say everyone's a douchebag. There's a particular type that's a douchebag. I think it's the type that is at the bar and then wants to start the UFC fight outside again with anyone else at the bar.
Okay. All right. Interesting conversation. I mean, we've all cited the fact that over our lifetimes, and all of us have had, you know, different lengths of lifetime, we've seen there's a shift between society giving a nod towards and approving the externalization of masculinity as physical violence and something that's encouraged amongst men, to something that's kind of looked down upon more than anything. And, you know, societal attitudes are changing. And maybe that's why things like UFC are popular, because people don't engage in violence anymore. So they live vicariously through the violence. You know, that's their way of externalizing their masculinity in a way that doesn't actually get them into any fights, but they're still engaging in a culture of violence, but not one that, I mean, they can just sit there and order more beers and it doesn't really affect them. So we've altered how some men externalize that masculinity and that performance and maybe there is just something in men, just because we've been socialized over decades and centuries to be physically capable, physically threatening, and able to protect our loved ones, that's just sort of somehow bred into the DNA, into the brainstem, so that we don't want to be placid. We feel being placid would be somehow letting down those who we have to defend, though we know damn well that none of us are in really great shape to defend anybody. But they're sort of our avatars, the people who are engaging in these sports. So they do it, so we don't have to. Interesting talk, though. And thank you guys for participating in it. I want to thank, of course, Andy Willis. The very formal Andrew Willis, who can be found at andyland.com, correct?
Yeah, andylandradio.com. And also, really important, over this last month, I developed a microsite called Friends with Andy. And it's a website that has information, tools, interviews with people that have written about various forms of self-help. And the whole idea is that I think everything, we can create some awareness, boundaries, and care, and everything can fall into that. So all these topics we talk about that are kind of tough, you know, go to andylineradio.com for the fun, but friendswithandy.org for the awareness, boundaries, and care.
Friends with or friends of Andy?
Friends with Andy.
Okay, friendswithandy.org. Okay, great. That's you've been busy. That's terrific. Okay, thank you, Andy.
You're welcome.
Aaron Seal, how is C-Fusion coming along?
Lovely discussions with Morpho over in China this week. And I tell you, I am anxiously awaiting kits to sell, because the number of people who tell me that they've been waiting for canna lattes for 6 months is just driving the both of us mad, aside from the fact that I've got money invested in this and need to make it back. So they need the kits as fast as possible so that you can all enjoy canna lattes and I can be rich again.
Okay.
Nice.
All right. And where can people find you online, Aaron?
It's at Aaron with one A, Seal like the animal. And the CPC leadership race is in its final stages. I comment every now and then. I'm not personally invested at this point, but I'm waiting for my ballot to come. And I have a feeling I'll only be marking two places.
All right. Thank you, Aaron. Chris Hamilton, MC Ill Tones, where can people find you, sir?
So they can find me at facebook.com/illtonesmusic, instagram.com/illtonesmusic, and youtube.com/illtonesmusic, and also search for me on Spotify.
All right. Thank you very much. Hafiz Noorani can be found at Feezy Does It, correct?
That is correct. On
and,
Twitter.
And you also provide digital marketing analysis and consulting, which you're doing with us too, and you provide very good service. So people can find you there if they're interested in that.
Yes, absolutely. You can message me anytime on Twitter. And if you have any questions on your marketing needs or if you are worried about, you know, where your business is going online, shoot me a buzz.
Yep, and I would recommend you do that. All right. Thank you all. I want to also encourage all of you, if you're enjoying these programs as much as we enjoy bringing them to you, let's make sure we all continue to enjoy these programs by helping us keep it going with some funding. There's lots of sites out there that get a lot of support through Patreon. We get some. We could use more. You ask, well, what do we need it for? We need it to keep our equipment in good shape. We have stuff we need to maintain, stuff we need to replace, and we want to expand. We want to expand, we want to build into the music and pop culture area, basically as a replacement for what Much Music used to be, using that old energy, which I know very well how to employ, and build to replace what that service was for Canadians. So there's what we're doing and what we want to do, and to do that, we need you to join us. So help us out. $1.25 a week equals $5 a month, which is not very much. You can do that by becoming a patron on Patreon. It's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/FUNetworkTV. And if you want to give a one-time donation, that is also very welcome. And you can do that on PayPal through our email address, funetworktv@gmail.com. So think about it. We appreciate all the help and support, and we appreciate that you're out there. Stats indicate that there's over 60,000 listens per month of our programming. That's a lot of people in Canada. So let's keep this going. Let's keep this building. We got something good here, and let's do it together. I'm Stephen Kersner. You can find me at Stephen J. Kersner. And I want to thank you guys for listening. Thank my panel for participating. This has been Mensplaining on FUN, the FU Network. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. Let's all say all of us. This is FUN! The FU Network!